All right. Thank you very much, Cheryl. And I trust you're recording. What I'm not certain is if tonight Ken is posting or I'm. So let me know who's posting. But hello, everyone, and welcome to I Am That. I am currently in the middle of a message called The Living Present. It's message number three. And it's been a couple of weeks since I have been here on Monday night. But 2 weeks ago, when I was here, we were looking at the liveliness that is in the current moment, which is not in the past or in the future. And we did a little experiment, which I'll go ahead and repeat now. Some of you were here with me 5 minutes ago in the room when Cheryl was playing a recording from The Way of Mastery. And so if you were here, you can kind of remember that. Wasn't that long ago. If you weren't here, I'm sure you can remember where you were 5 minutes ago before you came into the sanctuary. So what we want to do is take a memory from just 5 minutes ago, a very recent memory, and really contrast that with the feeling of this moment right here now. This moment of hearing my voice, or in my case, this moment of speaking. If you just take a moment to give your full attention to this moment for a moment, you'll notice that this moment has a sense of reality to it, a sense of realness to it. This moment is always very real. But if you look back in your memory at the memory that is now 7 minutes ago, remembering listening to the recording of The Way of Mastery or whatever you were doing 7 minutes ago, you'll notice that memory, although it's only 7 minutes old, already does not have the reality in it. It's a mental memory only. It doesn't have the reality that this moment has. And the reason for that is because I am here, and that I am isn't Regina, it's each of us, right? I am here. And I am real. And so wherever I am, my reality reflects on the current moment. And therefore, the current moment has a sense of reality. Yeah, I am not a recall. Very good, Kathy. So, if you think of us for a moment as think of your body as being like a lamp. Your light shines on whatever is around you. If you're a lamp, your light shines on whatever is around you. It's in the dark, but when you're there, it's in the light because you're a lamp. Well, it's the same sort of thing. You're real. You are reality. And so the moment that you are in, which is, of course, always this current moment, always now, it has a sense of reality that the past and the imaginary future do not have. If you were a lamp and you move from room to room, as you move from one room in the house to another room in the house, that room would light up, but the room you walk away from would go back into the dark as you left it. When you're in a moment, when the moment is here, when it's present, it's lit up by your reality. I'm sorry, I must have dropped the mic. I apologize. I love this. I love I love this teaching that we're looking at right now from the Living Present Message. When I first read it was about 3 years ago, probably. And I really sat and contemplated it, and I saw that because the current moment seems real, and because it's borrowing that reality from me, just like the room would borrow its light from me, the lamp, right? That by noticing the reality of this current moment, what I'm really doing is noticing my reality. Think about that. By noticing the reality that this current moment seems to have, right? By noticing the reality of this current moment, I'm noticing my reality. So that's kind of a review of what we were looking at in this message a couple weeks ago when I was here. So now I'm going to start on page 7 with the very first question on the page, which continues from what we were just talking about. The questioner says, but we deal with things remembered as if they were real. And Nisargadatta says, we consider memories only when they come into the present. The forgotten is not counted until one is reminded, which implies bringing it into the now. I was at my mom's last week, which is why I wasn't here. I went to see her for Thanksgiving. I haven't been with her over a holiday in many, many years. I've seen my mom, but I haven't been with her on a holiday in so many years that I really can't even remember. So I thought it would be nice to go and spend a holiday with her. So I went there for Thanksgiving. And while I was there, my mom would talk about things that I had forgotten. You're completely forgotten. But when she talked about them, I remembered, oh yeah, you know, I had forgotten about that. Well, that's kind of what he's talking about, that something that is forgotten, it's as if it doesn't even exist. It may have been a present moment once upon a time, but if it's forgotten, it's like it doesn't even exist. And in this moment, if I'm remembering it, then it's here with me in this moment. Now, it still doesn't have the same reality as this moment. And we can each look at that and see that that is true. You can contrast a memory with the reality of this moment and see that memory doesn't have the reality. But what he's pointing out is that we are literally only remembering something when it's also a part of the present. Now, you know, you may be able to remember a few things. I don't know how many things you can remember, like in the course of a few seconds. But everything else isn't here with you at all right now. It's completely forgotten. What he's emphasizing is that this moment now is really all that matters. Because this is the only place that I can be. I can literally only be in the present. And if I bring up the past, if I remember the past, I'm bringing the past into the present as a memory. But I can't be in the past. It's impossible for me to be in the past. I bring the past memory into the present where I am. But I am always in the present. The questioner says, yes, I can see there is in the now some unknown factor that gives momentary reality to the transient actuality. I can see there is in the now some unknown factor that gives momentary reality to the transient actuality. By transient actuality, I suppose he means the fact that time always seems to be moving, right? It's kind of a funny way to say it. Nisargadatta says, you need not say it is unknown. Because remember, the questioner said, I can see there is now some unknown factor, right? Some unknown factor that gives momentary reality. Nisargadatta says, you need not say it is unknown. For you see it in constant operation. Since you were born, has it ever changed? Things and thoughts have been changing all the time. But the feeling that what is now is real has never changed. Even in dream. And by dream here, Nisargadatta means at night when we're asleep. You know, at night when we're asleep and we're having a dream, no matter how bizarre it is, you know, like in some of my dreams, I fly. But when I'm actually in the dream, when I'm actually flying, that has a sense of reality. That's real. And in fact, in my case, for some reason, I suppose some psychologists could explain why, but whenever I fly, it's a secret. I really don't want other people to see me flying. It's a secret. It's a great thrill. I love being able to fly. It's not something that everybody can do, but I don't want to be seen. I don't want other people to know that I can do it. And it's very real. And in fact, in my dreams, I can even have memories. When I'm asleep, dreaming, I can remember being in this place at another time, which, you know, not that I ever was, the memories are as made up as the dream. But all of that seems real. When I wake up, it no longer does, of course. But it does when I'm in it. Why? Because my consciousness is shining on the dream. That's the room the lamp is in. I am real, and so the dream seems real. And Nisargadatta is saying, you don't have to say that there is some unknown factor that gives momentary reality, because you're aware of that in constant operation. It never changes. The sense of reality is always where you are. Just like if you're a lamp, the light is always where you are. As you move from one room to another, the light goes with you. But because we are real, wherever we are, whether it's in what's called the waking state, you know, not asleep is what I mean, not awakened as in enlightened, but just the waking state or the dreaming state, it has the same sense of reality because I am the same reality. My consciousness is the reality that makes wherever I am seem real. So you need not say it is unknown, for you see it in constant operation. Since you were born, has it ever changed? Things and thoughts have been changing all the time, but the feeling that what is now is real has never changed, even in dream. The questioner says, in deep sleep is no experience of the present reality. Nisargadatta says, the blankness of deep sleep is due entirely to the lack of specific memories. But a general memory of well-being is there. There is a difference in feeling when we say, I was deeply asleep, from I was absent. So this thing I've always contemplated it, and I guess always is a little bit of exaggeration, but what I mean is I return to this contemplation over and over and over again. this idea. That I am present in deep sleep, just like I am present in every moment of now. The only difference is I don't remember deep sleep. Remember, I mentioned earlier that if something is not remembered, it's as if it doesn't exist. And in fact, much of my life, and maybe much of your life, is not remembered, and therefore it's as if it didn't exist. Well, deep sleep is not remembered, and so it's as if deep sleep did not exist. But that doesn't mean that we weren't present. Just like I was present on January 26, 1963, but I don't remember January 26, 1963. But I was present. So I am present in deep sleep. Now, why don't we remember deep sleep? I'm going to give you my best guess at this point. It's because we are still too attached to the ego. And specifically, we're too attached to the ego's practice of looking out at perception. And in deep sleep, there's no perception to look out at. There isn't a dream. But in deep sleep, there's no perception to look out at. And because we perceive ourselves as the ego, and the ego is an outward-looking vehicle. That time when there's nothing to look out at is completely forgotten the moment it occurs. Without attachment to ego, with awareness of consciousness as what I am, I have read from more than one individual that there is an awareness during sleep that is remembered when awakening. You know, upon awakening, the person remembers watching themselves sleep, being present during sleep. So again, my guess is the reason we don't remember that is our attachment to ego. But notice, Nisargadatta says the blankness of deep sleep is due entirely to the lack of specific memories. And of course, as we know, whatever we aren't currently remembering, it's as if it didn't exist. But the fact that now it seems like we weren't present doesn't mean that we weren't present. It only means we don't remember it. He does say a general memory of well-being is there. And I've looked at that very, very deeply over a number of years since the first time I heard this. And I have to say that's true. It's not a specific memory, just like he says, but it's a general memory. You know, I've really contemplated why do we as adults love sleep so much? And I think it's because something in us knows that when we're in deep sleep, we are in bliss, literally. Deep sleep and bliss are synonymous. And we somehow know that, even though we don't have a specific memory. We know that. And so we love to go to deep sleep. In fact, I have known people who have, you know, suffering in their lives, and they haven't learned yet how to let go of suffering. And so what they do is they escape into sleep. And they sleep, you know, more hours than they need to because they're escaping into the bliss of sleep. They're not suffering when they're asleep. So he says, we know we're present. You know, we don't mistake it for being absent. Ramana Maharshi once said, we don't mistake it for being dead. We know we're present, we just don't have the specific memories. But we know we're present, and we also know about the well-being that is there, or the bliss that is there. We know we love sleep. We just don't remember it. The questioner says, we shall repeat the question we began with. So apparently the questioner feels like the conversation is going off in a direction that isn't quite answering the original intention. So this would have been a question that we looked at a couple of weeks ago. We shall repeat the question we began with. Between life's source and life's expression, which is the body, there is the mind and its ever-changeful, the stream of mental states is endless, meaningless, and painful. Pain is the constant factor. What we call pleasure is but a gap, an interval, between two painful states. Desire and fear are the woven fabric of living, and both are made of pain. Our question is, can there be a happy mind? Nisargadatta says, desire is the memory of pleasure, and fear is the memory of pain. Both make the mind restless. Moments of pleasure are mitigated. Gaps in the stream of pain. How can the mind be happy? So Nisargadatta seems to be agreeing with him that moments of pleasure are merely gaps in a stream of pain. But again, he has really defined pain as the restless mind. Many people are not sensitive enough to notice just the restless mind as pain. They think that, you know, in other words, they need more pain to see the pain because they've become accustomed to pain. I remember once many years ago, I went to a spa for a week. It was really a great experience. First of all, I love to exercise. And there I started taking classes at, I don't remember, 6 or 7 in the morning. The first class was often rowing on the lake there, you know, and then I would do like a weight class and a water aerobics class, which I love, and maybe a yoga class. And, you know, I don't remember what all, but I would start classes at like 7 in the morning and do classes until noon. In fact, my last class was the water aerobics class. I remember that. And then I would just go take off my bathing suit and put on my robe, because we had these huge terry cloth robes and we were allowed to go to lunch in our robe. And I would go to lunch in my robe, and they had a chef there that gave us these fabulous meals. And then after lunch, I would get a massage, or we'd just sleep outside in a hammock, or I'd get a facial and a pedicure. And then I think I had another yoga class late in the afternoon, like 4. And then I would shower and go to dinner. And then at night, there were movies and popcorn. I did this for a week. This was in Texas, not too far from Austin, Texas. I did this for a whole week. And I am not exaggerating. By the way, I was not on the spiritual path yet then. At the end of the week, I was so stress-free that I swear to you, the ground felt softer. I mean, everything was soft. I was soft, so everything was soft. But when I left there, I lived in Boston at the time, so I flew out of Austin, Texas, and flew back to Boston. And when I got to the Boston airport with all the honking and people yelling at each other and all the rushing, it was such a culture shock. And what I came to see was that the normal state, what I took as normal, was painful. But I didn't realize that normal was painful until I was so out of it, so relaxed, so away from it. So normal was painful, but I didn't recognize it as painful. It had to become more painful before I called it pain, right? But just the normal restless mind, and of course, the hustle and bustle of the body, which represents the restless mind, it's an outward picture of it, right? Just that normal is painful, but most people don't even see it. So Nisargadatta is really referring to that here. He's talking about how there's all of this pain and that pleasure is just a gap in that pain, but he refers to the pain as the restless mind. And so when the mind is not restless, when we allow ourselves to enjoy the moment, whether it's because we're taking in a piece of chocolate that we really like or something, we feel that pleasure. The real reason we're feeling that pleasure is we're allowing the mind to not be restless for a moment. For a moment, I'm being in the present with my chocolate. And so there's pleasure. Pleasure is a gap in the pain. It's a moment when I allow my mind to rest. I could be petting my dog, enjoying my grandchildren, watching a bird fly, but for a moment, I take a break from the pain of the restless mind. I just be. And let's see, I'm wondering if I should go into the next question. I will. It says, the questioner says, that is true. Because remember, Nisargadatta ended with, how can mind be happy? And the questioner says, that is true when we desire pleasure or expect pain, but there are moments of unexpected, unanticipated joy, pure joy, uncontaminated by desire, unsought, undeserved, God-given. And Nisargadatta says, still, joy is joy only against a background of pain. And the questioner says, is pain a cosmic fact or purely mental? Nisargadatta says, the universe is complete. Where there is completeness, where nothing lacks, what can give pain? The universe is complete. And where there is completeness, where nothing lacks, what can give pain? And we're out of time, so I'm marking that as the place where we'll start again, that the universe is complete, and where there is completeness, where nothing lacks, what can give pain? But what I want to say is, if you look at the restless mind is probably always thinking that something lacks, something's not right, something needs to be different, right? So where there's a perception of lack in one form or another, that's going to create the restless mind, and that's going to create pain. Okay, and so tonight's title, let's see. Let me think about that for a moment and then I'll type it in. I don't have an answer. I'll type it in just a moment. And I am releasing the mic.